Hi there, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. In the studio with me, Dieter Mittelstein-Scheid, who is one of my dearest friends, and with him, Batya Schwartz, who is also a dear, dear friend. And they come from Germany, Italy, and they are leaders of mindfulness. And I don't want to exaggerate it too much, but I'd like you to hear what they have to say and what they know and what they've built, which is kind of remarkable. So with that, let me introduce Dieter. Dieter, welcome back to WBAI.
Hi, Armand. Nice being here again.
And Batya, hi. How nice to have you here, too.
Hi.
Hi. So you guys do, you've spent many years. Well, Dieter, why don't you tell me what the background is of how this evolved?
Well, I used to have a therapy center for humanistic psychotherapies.
You were a psychiatrist.
Psychiatrist, yes, and therapist in near Munich. And I worked like 10 years with intense feeling therapy and other approaches in the humanistic psychotherapies. And we were working mostly on the biographical level. We looked at the roots of problems, how the childhood was of people, and we went into the feelings that we couldn't express and tried to make peace with what happened, sometimes difficult in our childhood. So it was very biographical, past-oriented. And the assumption was that that would be enough for the person to heal the wounds that happened. And then I came to study a lot more like spiritual teachers, especially Krishnamurti, Jiddu Krishnamurti. And more and more important, it came to me to ask myself if it wouldn't be possible to create an environment in which one meets oneself directly in the presence without going back into the past.
Well, wait, let me back that up just a minute.
Yeah.
You're doing therapy as a psychiatrist, and you're doing the standard therapy, but different forms, you know, intense feeling therapy, different modern forms, which are saying, go back to your early pain,
right,
experience your early pain, and that should free you.
Right.
And you're saying, well, it did good, but it didn't free people, and it didn't free me, Dieter.
Yeah. I felt there was definitely more acceptance, and there was some kind of becoming more movable in one's patterns. But I felt that the most beautiful thing in life was not really touched in this, which is just being feeling that one is alive and that one is together with everything else that is alive. And I felt that if one could create an environment in nature where one can really delve into this being together with the beauty of life, that would have a very healing effect that could be, let's say, the other side of therapy.
Okay, now before you created this, it sounds like you were just doing this work, then you studied with Krishnamurti, then you said, I'll build this place. But all through this, you're doing your own work on yourself.
Right, yeah.
All right, so yeah. Before you're creating this space, you're saying, I, Dieter, want to find this place inside myself where I feel settled, right?
Yes. So I did quite a lot of experiences by myself. Yeah, I went into the mountains for 2-3 weeks alone, like in the middle of the snow, and just walking around with skis and just being there by myself. And it has a very strong effect on the mind, because the mind calms down when one is in such a quiet environment for a long time and one has nobody to talk to. Yeah. So I felt that silence has a very strong effect
on you,
on myself. Yeah.
And you were a talking guy. You were a guy who was a psychiatrist. You talked to people. People talked to you. You were always talking, and you suddenly just got quiet.
Yeah. I also did experiences in the desert, in Israel in the desert, and in Morocco in the desert. And it's just incredible when one is in the middle of the big space of the cosmos at nights, and one doesn't talk, and one is alone by nature. One is touched by other energies than when is one if one is always busy with the stories in one's head and what one has to do and one's plans and so on. So,
but how do you get yourself even in the desert? I mean, I know enough people. How do you get your mind to stop the stories? Get your mind to stop the words.
It's actually a very natural process. It's not that I decided I want to stop now thinking about myself. It's just that my attention is then more going into the direct perception of what is around. So I look at the stars, or I look at the movements of the mountains, or I smell the air. And there's something that I call presence, yeah, that is just the immediate beingness that is there, that is so strong that and it is not made out of words, it's not made out of thinking. So I feel there is something that's very real, very alive, which has nothing to do with what I think.
And nothing to do with what you think?
No, nothing to do
with what I think. And how about with what you feel? Tangentially with what you feel, because it may or may not be accurate? Your feelings may or may not betray you?
It evokes definitely sensations in the body and feelings. Yeah, usually it evokes feelings of being taken in, or of streaming, or feelings of awe, mm-hmm. of wonder, of amazement. It's very rare that it evokes negative feelings in me.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think one of our teachers once said that you never experience any transcendence unless you experience a prior death. Do you think in order to go to the place where you could be present, you have to go through some kind of death of your old way? Do you think there's a transcendent way, or do you just shut your mouth?
I studied this question very much.
I
came to an answer that's a little bit different than what most people say. I feel that, the way I see it is that the whole processes of our thinking, of our I, what I call our I, our ego, our identity, the thought that all that is happening actually in the presence of now. So there's no contradiction. So if the attention goes more into the now, into the presence, into the aliveness, the thinking gets less loud, I would say. And because it gets less loud, it has less weight and less meaning. But it doesn't mean that it suddenly is no longer there. It's an instrument that can start any moment new. But it's not in that sense, as I see it, a death. It is just becoming quiet and less important.
So if you were right this minute, if anybody were listening, and they said, how would I reach for this Dieter Batya kind of presence? How would I reach for it? You would probably say, okay, here's what you do. Wherever you're sitting now, what would you do? What would you say to people?
I would say just, first of all, go right away feeling the sensations in your body. Feel your breath. Feel anything you feel in the body, because that is now. That is actual. Yeah? Then if you have the eyes open, perceive what is around you. Listen to the sounds around you. Smell. Hear whatever you hear, and just be completely with the senses, basically that.
So sense what's happening in your body now, but don't focus on it in exclusion of everything else.
No.
That's just one thing. And then sense your breath, but don't just focus on your breath and do nothing else. And then smell what's happening in the environment. Just smell, and then hear whatever you hear, and see whatever you see, but see it like you're taking a picture of it?
No, it's more bathing in it, like really going really going into it. I call it open attention. Yeah, open attention. Whatever is in the field of perception is there, and one lets it be there, and one more or less in feeling it, in listening to it, in smelling it, in seeing it, one unites with it, actually. One unites with it.
So one becomes part of it, too.
Yes.
You become like an exchange with it. So somebody sitting at their desk now, you don't pick a single object to focus on. You don't look at a flower and say, see the beauty of that flower.
No, I wouldn't. You could do that, of course. Yeah, you could also just look in the flower and kind of let the flower unite with you. Yeah, it is. There's no, in this kind, there's not a clear-cut method. It's basically that the attention unites with something which is in the present moment there. And that can be a single being, or it can be an unfocused perception of all. Can be both.
Great.
Another approach, or another important part of this uniting with what is, yeah, to unite with what is also to observe thinking. So not only to go into the sensations in the perception, but also to listen to how thinking occurs, yeah, to see how thoughts are formed and how contents have a strong emotional load on them, how the attention gets sucked into these contents of thought, and to see the whole mechanism that makes up our thinking world. So it's not enough just to go into perception, but one has also to see how we develop this identity in our thinking world.
Well, if you would, those are nice words.
Yeah.
But if you were doing it with a student, if you were doing it with someone, how would you guide them through that? How would you guide them?
Now, first, I would say very simple. I said just observe your thoughts, yeah, like what one does in meditation.
When you say observe your thoughts, you mean watch the things you're thinking, look at the things you're thinking, like be aware of them?
Not only content-wise, not that you go only in the content of the thoughts, yeah, like whatever it might be, but that you also see how one thought follows another, how a thought, for instance, follows a feeling, and how then the thought triggers another thought, and that triggers another thought, like how thought has associations, how thoughts can go in closed circles, always thinking the same thought, or how thoughts become light, how thoughts become heavy. So it's kind of a meta level from which you observe thinking. It's not only directly in the content, but also in the process of thinking.
Do you think that most people's thoughts are a distraction from their better selves? Do you think thinking is mostly wasted time?
I don't know.
Because most people, when they think, they either worry about the future or they're thinking about the past.
I think that we waste a lot of energy in thinking, yeah? Mm-hmm. That's for sure. But I think thinking can also be extremely creative, yeah? Thinking can be full of enthusiasm. I mean, all the ideas, all the inventions that we do, all the books that we write, I mean, all of this comes from thinking. So thinking has also an aspect that is extremely beautiful. It's a movement of life. I don't think that thinking is against life. It is just that we don't see the beauty and the place of thinking, and when thinking is actually not necessary because there's just being.
You know, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, with Dieter Mittelstein-Scheid and Batya Schwartz from Poci in Italy, which we'll talk about as well. And they're here, they're good friends of mine, they're here visiting with us, and I wish I could convey to you that there is a wisdom with these two friends that I know. And it's very difficult because you hear many people on the radio. So I guess I'm asking you to hear their beauty as I see it, because it's there. And then not just at their beauty, but what they're saying is essential, an essential truth. And we're not selling anything. So we're talking about trying to find a place where you're at peace. And I think what Dieter said a little earlier is true, that you go through therapy of any kind and it helps you reclaim part of your life by getting rid of the blocks that you have against remembering things and going through things. But then when you're done with that, the question is, what now? And the question becomes, what now? And certain people move to transcendental things and they go to meditation and they become spiritual, so to say, but they become part of the universe. But there's a trick in there. Now, you've seen, Dieter, you've studied with almost all the masters who are out there. You know, you've been to ashrams, haven't you? You've been to, how many people have you seen and spent time with? Krishnamurti was one.
Yeah, that was the main one. The others, I studied more through books, yeah, Ramana Ramashi or Sri Nisargadatta. And others I read. I saw.
But you've traveled also a great deal. You've been to India.
I saw Bhagwan. I saw Bhagwan Osho. Yeah, I saw some other people. I never got really attracted to gurus.
But when you would see them, you would be asking the big question: tell me about this. What do you got? What's your secret? You know, what's the essence?
Yeah.
And they all seem to say the same thing.
Yeah, they all seem to point at the fact that the most real that we can experience in life is to go right into the beingness of the moment and not to go into thinking. That is what they all say, basically.
Now, that's great. But if you go into the beingness of the moment, why would you leave it ever?
I don't know. I think it's our nature. I think I see the human being very much just the way we are. And we are thinking human beings. And thinking is part of our nature. I think one should never make thinking into an enemy or something one has to get rid of. I think it's a misunderstanding many people have when they read about meditation and spiritual paths. I think one just has to see what thinking is and what is there else in life. And to get in peace with both of them and to discover that there's an essence in us or an inner beauty that is always there and that has nothing to do with what we think.
Do you remember Stalking the Wild Pendulum? What was his name?
Right. I forgot the name. Yeah.
Do you remember him?
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
we
yeah.
both knew him, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And Itzhak Bentov.
Bentov, right. Yes.
Itzhak Bentov. You know, Itzhak Bentov said something very interesting about expanding your mind. He said, every time you move to the present or expand your mind, he would define it as a blip. But at the top of this blip is like a little balloon. And he would say, every time you move towards a spiritual consciousness or a consciousness of now, every time you do it, you leave a little part of yourself behind in that space. And then you come back and you go back to it again and you leave another part of yourself behind. But it's not like you leave 10% behind and you bring 90% back. It's like you bring back 100%, but you leave 10% there. And then so now you're 110% because you have 10% of wisdom. And then he says you go there again and you leave another 10%. And a little bit, and then you come back, and you still bring back 100%, but now it's kind of like 120% because you have a consciousness. And he eventually said what happens after you do it often enough is you have 100% there and 100% here at the same time. And he said, this is the goal. The goal is to be in both places at once.
Right, yes. I see that very similar. I mean, I would say in different words, yeah. For me, is to it is a very simple thing, really, to be. When one is really feeling that one is alive, for me, it's like coming home. It's like coming home. It's our natural state. There's nothing unusual about it. It's the most natural thing. And then there is this whole world that we have learned and have constructed about ourselves, and that we believe that that is the only thing we are, though we are in reality this real simple essence of now. Yeah, and what I see is the more one tastes this home, one's home, my home, the more liquid the other becomes. It just becomes more liquid. So it's like loosening screws of a constructed kind of a construction, and then it becomes more liquid. It flows more, and I think flowing is actually the most natural state we can get into, to just flow, to flow with what is.
Well, what about suffering?
Yeah, suffering is definitely comes because we are not so liquid. Yeah, because we are holding on to things.
Do you think suffering is all an illusion?
I mean, not physical suffering, of course.
And not suffering of the death of someone close to you, or
I think that is an illusion is not the movement of the feelings in the body, but all the stories we make around it, and the holding on and thinking maybe I should have done it this way or that.
And he doesn't love me. She doesn't love me. Yeah. I need a better job. I don't have a better job. Now this is common suffering.
Right.
I'm losing my stocks. I don't have any money. I don't know what to do. I don't know where to get a job. I got to get a new girlfriend. My boyfriend is running away with somebody else. This is suffering. What are you saying about it? Are you saying when a person comes to you filled with jealousy, fear, pain, what are you saying to them? This is illusory?
No, I would never say that, because a person would immediately feel that I reject him or I criticize him. Yeah? So I wouldn't say it's illusory.
But you think that?
I think that the person is kind of caught in an inner film, in a kind of a specific way of looking at things, which always comes from holding on to something which either has passed or which has not arrived, or not forgiving something that has happened. So it's always like fighting what is. Suffering for me is always has to do with fighting what is.
Well, what about couples who are always fighting what is about, you know, I want you to be different. I want you to be different than you are. I want you to be different. What about this thing? I mean, do you think that couples and the battles that they have are completely illusory? I mean, it sounds stupid to me. You know, it sounds like an illusion, most of it. You know, I mean, what are they fighting about? What are you fighting about? I want you to be different than you are. You want me to be different than I am. Whereas you would say, I'm willing to bet, that if the two of you found a commonplace, a place of being here, then all that would disappear?
Yeah, I'm convinced of that. I'm convinced if a couple meets really completely in the present moment, where they feel that is where they really touch each other and look at each other and love each other, the past has no meaning in that moment. And when the past has no meaning, there cannot be a suffering from the past that has meaning. But mostly we don't do this because we see our partners through images that we have gotten used to, and we have so many patterns in our relationships. So we are kind of playing some kind of a ping pong, a table tennis game with each other, yeah, where we kind of just get triggered by certain stimuli, and then we get hooked by that, and then we fight back. But all of this is basically pretty pretty automatic, mechanical stuff. And if we manage to get out of that, and suddenly, and I think it happens to many couples, when they are suddenly, for instance, in a beautiful landscape, or suddenly they eat something incredibly good, or they have an incredible, beautiful physical meeting with each other, they forget all of this for a moment. Suddenly they are melting in the moment, and they love each other. So that shows this, that this conflict, they always come from not being now here, not being with the moment.
Which is when people go away together and they go on vacation together and they drop everything for a while.
Right.
And they suddenly are in, like at a beach or something, and they say, shoo, and they make the connection, suggesting that the connection is there. You know, the beauty of sexual passion at the beginning is it brings you together like magnets, like powerful magnets. It brings you together in a now experience of passion. But passion kind of wears down, you know, the passion itself wears down. And I think that the sexual passion, the immediate attraction, is just a hint of what's possible.
Yeah, I think so.
When you take the sex away from it, that same passion is possible. Don't you agree?
Yeah, maybe not with the same kind of a fire that you have, but I think...
Oh, how about a greater fire?
Yeah,
For by Dieter standards... A greater fire.
Yeah. I would say a more intense, softer. It's a direct fire. It is not a driven fire. Now I got it. It's not a driven fire.
Okay, so now this is an important distinction. When you are driven by your sexual passions, you are driven.
Yeah, you want to get somewhere. So there's a drivenness. There's something where one is aiming at.
And when you approach it from the place of being present and being with each other, you're not being driven to it.
Right.
Right? You're kind of floating towards it.
Yeah, you float in it, you swim in it, you...
You are being in it.
Yeah, you're being in it. It's natural, as I said. It feels very natural.
It would seem that part of the process, and we're gonna, when we take our short break, when we come back, I want to speak to you and Batya about the work that you've seen at the Pochi that you've built. But it would seem that for all the couples out there who are in the experience of distress, if they could find a way to be in the present and to be here together now, without going into the words and the distractions and the pains of yesterday and the pains of the future, mm-hmm. that if they could do it, it would be the ultimate, I would say, healing process, but it's almost like an unpain process. It's like the pain is really an illusion. So you're not really healing, because healing would mean that the pain is real.
Yeah, it would be like realizing together immediately that one is meeting in love, yeah? And in that meeting in love, the pain is just a memory. It's not really hurting. There's no hurting there.
Well, love is a big word now. Is love like people know romance love, like with a big heart, or is love being present?
I think it's a taste of being present. I think it is a taste of being present, love. Mm.
So you and Batya, you decided, after doing this work on yourselves for so long, both as a couple and as individuals, and we're going to hear from Batya as soon as we get back from our break, you decided that you would try to find a way. Now, part of your secret, part of what you have as your secret in order to feel the presence, you like to quiet the words, right?
Right, yeah.
And you believe in silence.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me what you mean by believing in, I mean, what is the power? Why silence?
Because especially when we are together, yeah, when we are with other people together, what we normally do is we call each other constantly through what we tell each other into stories of the past, of the future, or of beliefs we have, opinions, we get into discussions. So we are constantly talking about something that has nothing to do with where we are right now. It has to do with anything, the movie from yesterday or a trip I plan or whatever, yeah? So when we don't talk with each other because we made the agreement to stay together for some time without talking, then all of that falls away immediately. So how do we meet then?
Yeah? That's very exciting. When we get back from our break, we're going to pick this up. This is Armand Amil. We'll be right back, my friends, with more from Dieter and Batya.
This is listener-supported, non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City, bringing you news, information, and programming meant to empower you. We need your support. If you go to our website, wbai.org, and press the donate button, for as little as $10 a month, you can become a sustaining member. You'll be making a tax-deductible contribution that helps us help you, by bringing you Truth in Radio.
Thank you. listening to The Positive Mind with Armand Zemiro on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial.
And we're back with Armand Zemiro, The Positive Mind, with Dieter Middleston-Scheid and Batya Schwartz, who are both friends, dear old friends, and have visiting our country from Italy and from Germany. Now, let me get that clear. Batya, you're both in Germany and Italy?
No, well, we live in Tuscany since 25 years, and in the last 10 years we've been spending time in Munich during the winter months.
Uh-huh. And what do you do when you're in Munich? Do you work in Munich?
Yes, we do breath work.
Whatever that is.
Yes, we can explain what that is as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what I wanted to say before, when you were talking about being in the presence and, you know, how it helps to go on vacation and go on the beach or and then feel again not burdened by life and one is in the presence again, I wanted to say that it would be very interesting to explore also what's happening right this minute as we're talking on the show with you, so that we are actually operating on simultaneous levels. On one level, we're talking with you. On the other level, we're really here now, right now in the present.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be, and also the listener is right now here with us in the present.
Well, we don't know about the listener. They could be doing their laundry.
But they're still in the present while they're doing their laundry. And so we don't have to go far away. We don't have to go far away. We can always, if there is a way we can understand and feel that that presence is right now taking place while we're doing everything else, if we would have a key into that momentum, into feeling that.
Well, here we have three people, you, Dieter, and me, who are all both aware of that moment, potential, right? Search for that moment potential. And yet we're talking and doing something which is making this presentation to the radio audience. So all three things are going on, but it's just magic when I'm with the two of you. That space just becomes the valuable space. It's where we want to be. We don't want to be anywhere else.
Exactly.
The three of us want to be here.
It's the magic of the moment.
Yeah, great. So let me ask you something about this place. Let's go back to what you decided to build.
Right.
What did you do, Dieter?
Oh, we went to a wine olive farm in Tuscany. And there's an old house by the river in a very beautiful valley and natural surroundings. We renovated that place.
How big is it? How many acres is it?
The whole place?
Yeah.
Or the whole place, about 200 acres.
200 acres, yeah, rolling hills, beautiful old houses and streams. I've been there.
Right.
And old stone house, you know, or two. Right, and you've had this now how long?
We have this now more than 25 years, and especially this old mill house is over 800 years old, and we do there what we call silent retreats.
Yeah. In the mill house?
In the mill house, yeah.
Right, named after Armand de Mille. You call it the mill house. No, in the mill house.
In the mill house, exactly.
Right. Which is where they call it the mill house because that's where they used to grind.
That's correct.
Right?
Yes.
And this is kind of you grind things to a powder. Mm-hmm. And now when you meet with people, this is in a sense, essence what happens. Now, you have gatherings, groups of people. In fact, if people are listening now, what website can they go to look at the very place we're talking about? Is there a website for Pochi?
Yeah, there's a small website, www.locpochi.com.
So if you're listening now and you have access to a computer in front of you, which is fun, go to locpochi.com, locpochi.com, and you'll pull up both. Are there photographs of you and Batya on there as well?
No, unfortunately not.
That would be nice. We'll have to get those because then people could see your faces too. But you could see the house, you could see the mill house,
right.
You could see the farm.
Yes.
So you 25 acres of land in Italy. Now, I know you, Dieter, I know you didn't buy it and say, this will be a good investment.
No.
No, you bought it because you wanted...
Yeah, we wanted to be just living in nature. That was a main personal motive, to be in a quiet place. I mean, it's really very quiet there. and to offer something, invite people and to say, look, we have this beautiful...
Was that the first intention, to invite people? Or was the first intention to be?
The first intention was actually no intention.
Right, that's what I thought.
Yes. So we just happened to fall into that place through circumstances. We were not looking for it. And then when we were there, we asked ourselves, actually, what can we do now with this place? What could this place serve for? And then pretty soon came the idea of doing silence retreats.
There was no other choice. There was no other choice, because when we saw the mill house, we realized that that place was meant to be just for silence and just to be admired and to be in and to just be there.
Well, why in silence? Why not sit there and talk about it?
Because it is so beautiful there that you don't want to do anything else but to be in it. You don't want to put anything on top of it.
Well, you say you. I know a lot of people who go to Pochi, mm-hmm. and they want to talk. Now, it's not that they automatically feel it, that they walk in and they can't talk? Is it?
There is a presence in the place that is very powerful.
Mm. But everybody knows going there.
No, it's of course, I mean, we invite people with the invitation to not talk, yeah? So people come because they don't want to talk. If people visit us that are not coming for this, they talk there, of course they talk.
I mean, it's not a good place to go to meet somebody. Well, actually, it would be a great place to go to meet somebody because you meet them without words.
Right.
Yeah.
How many people at a time usually will come to one of your retreats?
About 10 to 14. It's a small group, yeah.
And how long does it last?
We do usually an introduction of a day, and then the silent time in which we don't talk at all is between 6 and 12 days, depending. We have different structures. And then we talk again for a day to prepare for going back into society.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. So for 6 to 12 days. Now, Bhatia, what do you do there at Pochi? What do you do?
In the silence?
What do you do beforehand? What do you do with people who are arriving? What's your work there?
Well, I participate in the silence with Dita, so we are fully there during the silence. And we lead the silence not with words. We lead there the silence just with our being there and with our personal love for being in silence. Now, before the silence and after the silence, of course, there's a lot of work to be done on the farm, which is just basically maintaining the farm, preparing it for the guests, doing the flower beds, making the rooms beautiful, just making the space what it is. So when the people arrive, they can just be there, relax.
So you're kind of in charge of presenting the space. You doctor the space. You work the space so that it's at its maximum beauty.
Yes.
Do you
yes.
like working in the garden?
I love it.
Tell me what you love.
Well, I love the flowers. I love the colors. And especially I have to say that What is very beautiful in Tuscany is the light. So the flowers, the light in Tuscany is so beautiful. So the flowers are so beautiful. The colors are very strong, extraordinary.
And you have all kinds of flowers.
Yes. So when people come, when you look at people there, their background is basically flowers. So every person you see is surrounded by flowers, make them more beautiful.
A bouquet of flowers that you bought, or
I don't buy bouquets.
They're growing in the ground.
That's the beauty of Pochi. I can make 15 bouquets for each room without paying a penny for it.
Yeah. In the corner of the mill, there grows a pink rose, and last May there were about, I would say, 1,000 blossoms, like a waterfall running down the wall of the building. Yeah.
Oh my gosh!
It was absolutely magic. Really beautiful.
See, you must charge $100,000 for people to come for a week.
Yeah. No, we have a range between 50 and 80 euros a day for the people. They pay according to what they can pay in that range, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't think it's very expensive.
And what it does is it gives them just what they could pay, plus the whole they get all their food there too.
Yeah,
you grow a lot of the food, don't you, the vegetables?
Vegetables, fruits, not so many. Yeah, we have vegetables, salads, and so on, yeah, of course. And
do they collaborate in making the food together, or do you make the food for the people?
Nowadays, people make their food for breakfast and lunch, and dinners are cooked because it was making too much noise in the mill when it was cooking there. So now the service has become better.
Where do people sleep?
They sleep in double rooms mostly.
In the mill?
In the mill, yeah.
We all sleep in the mill.
We also sleep in the mill.
Well, I didn't think the mill was that big. I remembered it as relatively small.
No, it has 14 beds, and then sometimes people tent out also, yeah. So with 16 people, one can easily be there.
And there is always a possibility for one or two people to be in a single room if the group is not so big.
Mm-hmm. You've had larger groups. You've also had great celebration. What about dancing and stuff like that? Now, Bacha, you're such a lively person and you're such a creative person. I've always remembered you as a great dancer and musician. Is that get included in this? Is there any celebration or is it all silence and somber?
No, we have had some beautiful workshops with very, very good dance teachers in Pochi. Excellent teachers.
But is that part of a silent meditation?
No, it's a kind of a way to complement all of the energies in Pochi. So on the one hand, we do silence. On the other hand, we also dance and celebrate in other times of the year.
Oh, it's like growing two different crops. You know what I mean? It's like growing cucumbers and then growing alfalfa. You try to get it to balance each other.
You know, in order for the earth to be really fruit, make good fruits, you have to change the crops from time to time.
Yes, you do. So you change it at Pochi. Yeah. So at Pochi, if people are, I know you have other techniques that you use. It's not just silence. The idea is not come here, get quiet, and we'll see what happens. You teach people different techniques to find their own inner selves. What do you teach? What are some of the things you do?
I mean, we have meditations, of course, sitting meditations. So we teach or we bring close to the people certain techniques, how to observe the mind and how to observe the breath for meditation. And then we do something we call breath work, which is a very gentle body work with the hands. So we treat the people with our hands during the silent retreats.
Well, let's take a little time with that. Breath work, as we know it here in the West, I'm considering we're in the West and you're in the East because you're in Europe. Because Europe starts with E, which means East.
East, right.
Right?
Old Europe.
Yes. Breathwork. Breathwork is you doing something with people as they breathe. Now, this is remarkable work, but I don't know if you could describe it. Can you give me a sense of what it is? Can you try to describe it? A person lays down on the floor?
No, yeah, we have a treatment table. Yeah, the person is with comfortable clothing.
I want to back up. I want to make sure people understand. They're talking to Dieter Middleston Scheid and Bacha Schwartz from Pochi. And Dieter is a psychiatrist by training. So he's also a physician by training, and he's also, you know, a master of the mind or a student of the mind. And all of that is somewhere in the background. So now you get to use all of this schooling that you went to and all this education, and you get people on a table, and what do you do to them?
Well, let's say the intention is to invite the person to enter into the presence. It's the same like what we talked before, yeah? And because the breath is such a beautiful friend, I always say breath is our best friend that we have, we just tell the person, put your attention just on feeling your breath, or we say connect with your breath. And then with our hands, we put the hands on the body and we connect through the hands also with the breath of the person. So basically, there's a meeting between me and the person on the table through his breath. And I meet the being of that person in meeting the breath of the person, and the person feels it. So it's kind of
walk. So how do you meet the breath? You know, if it were anybody else talking, I'd swear, and they were on the radio, I'd say, you're wacky. But I know you. So how do you meet it? I mean, when they inhale, you feel something with one of your hands. You have two hands on their body or one hand?
Two hands, yes.
Two hands. And where would they be placed? One on
They could be placed anywhere.
Okay, so let's see, if one on the nose and the other on the toes.
No, you wouldn't have that probably.
So anywhere is not true.
We also move the extremities, yeah. But in the beginning, of course, to get into the flow of the breath, we have the hands on the belly and on the chest, on the sides, on the back, yeah. Surfaces, they're moving with the breath. They're actually breathing, so you feel that with your hands. And you...
You meaning you, Dieter.
Yeah, I feel that with hands, and also the person feels it. And
okay.
So it's like the breath in the inhalation fills the hands, the breath of the person fills my hands, I feel that. And I meet it, and then I give it, for instance, a little pressure, or I pull a little bit, I invite the breath to come here or there through moving my hands in different places of the body. And it's like really more and more like flowing together, moving together in this natural movement of the breath. We don't try to change the breath. We don't tell the person to breathe in a special way. Just be with the breath.
So you invite the breath to be.
Yes, yes. And to be in the awareness of both of us, yes.
It's actually very simple. Things are usually more simple than they appear. It's like what Dieter said, breath is a movement. Breath is a movement. And in the moment we feel this movement, even if it's very little, and in many of us to begin with it is very little, almost for survival's sake, even if we feel that little movement, we are in touch with the presence. And in that moment...
Well, what do you mean by movement?
If you put your hands right now on the sides, for example, of your body, and you just inhale, and don't even big inhale, even a little inhalation, you will feel that there is literally a physical movement going on in the body. Mm. When you're in touch with that movement, you're in touch with living.
Hmm. You mean just by putting... That's very fascinating.
It's very simple.
It's very simple.
It is.
If you put your hands on the body, you become aware.
If you put on the chest.
On the movement. And by putting your hands, by you, Dieter and Batya, by putting your hands on the person's body, you bring a little accent to the place.
Right, that's right.
Yeah, so that what happens is that at that moment, we are both listening to the movement of life.
Mm.
We're both listening to the movement of life.
And because... the base attitude of us is complete acceptance, and we don't want to change anything. The person who is touched feels this acceptance, yeah, and can just give in to being carried by this movement of life, which is the breath. So it has very much to do with what we were talking in the beginning about going into the moment, into the presence, and trusting this flow of being. Yeah, it is a natural method that is we use since more than 14 years now. Yeah. During the sciences, and also not in the sciences, also when we are in Munich, we do the same. And it is an amazing intensity of meeting another human being in this.
Well, you know, I mean, a lot of people would claim that this is a method of healing, you know, and a lot of the healing people out there, they do hands-on work, like Barbara Brennan and people like that.
Right.
And they do this hand-on. You don't claim to be doing healing.
No, we don't.
You don't make any claims.
No, we don't make any claims. And we also don't make promises. And we also don't say we want to achieve something specific. We just say it's an invitation to feel that you're alive, as
right.
Batya said. That was very nicely said, yeah, that we are alive. And that feels good to be alive.
Dieter Mittelson-Scheid, Batya Schwartz from Lok Pochi in Chianti. I mean, it's which is kind of a beautiful place. I've been there myself. I've seen a lot of people who have gone there. And there's a feeling you get. And the feeling, I hope it's being transmitted to you, is that these two people have traveled the world looking for a sense of, you know, the being. And I have loved where you both have come and what you've gotten to. What becomes the big challenge for a person? Because when a person gets silenced, you know, Dieter, for a lot of people like listening to this program who go there, they're going to be silent for the very first time ever in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
What happens? What are some of the resistances that they may encounter? Do people get sick, for example? And, you know, like, you know, point at their arm saying, I got to get a doctor. I mean, what kind of resistances do you usually run into?
People can get nervous. That is the most common thing, that people get nervous and irritated inside, and the mind speeds up in the beginning because one doesn't talk anymore. But my experience is, after doing it for so many years now, nearly everybody, really, I can say this, calms down after some time. And after three, four...
Usually how much time? 3 days, four days?
After 3-4 days, you don't notice anymore that you don't speak. It has become natural.
Wow.
It has become natural. And when we stop then after 10, 12 days, most of the people don't want to talk. It is a real hurdle they have to take in order to start talking again, because they feel it so precious. And this is a preciousness they know. When I utter the first words, I'm out of it. So there's a real resistance to start talking.
Well, other than going to Pochi, people who are listening might try this for themselves. What's it like to have a day of silence?
Yeah, definitely. And especially in couples, it can be very beautiful.
A day of silence, nothing spoken. Do they write messages to each other if they have to?
We don't encourage that.
Do they use hand signals?
We also don't encourage that. Yeah, it happens, of course. But we always say, watch your nonverbal communication so that we don't get... We can also talk without words. We can become very loud. And mostly people, from time to time, they write a note, but it's not an important thing.
You know what most people do as a resistance that I've seen in most places is they find fault with the setting. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a cockroach in my room. You know, there's this wrong. Oh, I can't get comfortable. It's too cold or too warm or something like that. You don't even give them a chance to say it because you have no way of communicating.
Yeah, of course.
We talk about all these possibilities in the first day. We discuss every possible question that may appear in one's mind.
So people have one day of staying there without getting silent yet, so they can come back and complain for a little bit if they want to. You're laughing because they never do. They don't come back and complain.
Yes, people can complain about little things, but they're very little.
Well, Dita, one more thing I wanted to ask you about. It's kind of an unusual thing to ask, but I would imagine as a leader, what you run into when you have a group of 14 people is people trying to get you as a symbolic father figure to pay attention to them in particular. Do you have that happen? Do you have that... In some way, do you have this kind of competition for your attention? Because it's such a natural part of life.
It can happen, but because I'm really participating, I'm not participating in a role. I'm really participating. I'm very much in my own space, so people cannot really hook me into it. And I think that communicates. So people just respect that I'm in my space and don't try to do this.
What else do you find about you?
I think what we do actually there is that we try as much as possible to be in the experience for ourselves, to stay in an equilibrium all the time. And that, I think, generates to the other people that they also can do that. We stay inside ourselves.
You show it.
Yeah, we enjoy the silence.
Now, let me ask you something. When everybody's gone, do you two sometimes have an argument?
Of course.
You yell at each other?
After the silence is usually not.
But it's hard.
Especially if we both participate. If one participates, we can get into an
argument. But you know what the hooks are like, right?
Of course, yes.
I mean, you're also human and stuff happens. And,
absolutely.
And you return to that and it's not just... just this saintly endeavor.
No, not at all. But I wanted to say that for me, I really do the sciences. I mean, I want to offer it to other people, but I really do it because it's my own passion. Yeah?
Right.
I just love to do it for myself. And I invite others to join me. That's my attitude to it.
You know, one other thing I wanted to say, among the many techniques, do you still use slow motion?
Yes.
Yeah, you didn't describe that. Tell people what you do with that.
Yeah, we have in one... one day a week, the whole group moves from morning to night in slow motion, real slow motion, everything, eating, preparing food, going to the meditation place. So it's like the whole group is kind of floating together.
Everything, hands, movement, and people could do that on their own. If you're going to be doing a silence on your own, try also adding some slow motion to it. Not such a bad idea. You know, it all kind of works. Well, I want to thank you two for being with us.
Thank you,
thank you, Amon.
It is Lokpochi, L-O-C-P-O-C-I, not mm-hmm. L-O-C dot. It's L-O-C,
no.
One word.
One word.
L-O-C-P-O-C-I.com. If you want to send me an email, I'll forward it to them in some way. Or you could do it through the website.
Yes,
right?
You mm-hmm. can do it through the website.
Through the website. We're going to have to be going right now, my friends. If you wanted to hear today's program again, you could go to WBAI.org. Or you can go to thepositivemind.com, where you'll hear a lot of archives. And you could send an email also to Armand, A-R-M-A-N-D, at thepositivemind.com. I'd love to hear from you and hear your reactions. Be back with you soon, my friends. Hey there, friends. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Having been a little under the weather, as we all have, huh? Well, help us with our recovery. Go to WBAI.org and help us by joining the Buddy System. The more people we have on a recurrent basis giving money to the station, the less we'll have to have fund drives. Help us cut down on those and we'll do what we can for you. WBAI.org, Buddy. Make a difference.
Brutal encendió nuestra pasión.